And we're talking this segment about the organization Children First, which is based here in Santa Fe. I'm delighted to welcome Lisa Stuckey, who is executive director of the organization. Philip Crump is the board president, and Prentice Chatfield is a school counselor and therapist, and she's facilitator for Children First. Welcome, everybody, to the Radio Cafe.
Thanks so much, Charlotte.
So what's the organization all about?
Well, Children First is about supporting the healthy development of children who are suffering the traumatic experience of a familial breakup. You know, when parents separate or divorce, often they are the needs of their children are neglected pretty much by omission or distraction rather than intention. You know, parents are usually overwhelmed with the whole process of divorce already, and they're trying to navigate the new territory of separation. And they're often unaware of their, you know, the behaviors, the actions that they take that really harm their children. And many separated parents, no matter how well-meaning they are, they just don't have the tools and skills because it's something new to know how to learn to co-parent together. So that's a pretty tricky part. And we try to help children become happier and more resilient by teaching the parents, giving them skills and tools to work through that new relationship and keep their focus on the children.
Those skills and tools, I think, are incredibly important because if during times of stress you just rely on your instinct, a lot of times that's not enough.
Right, right. That's definitely true.
What's the history of this organization? How did it get started?
Children First was founded in 2004 by psychologist Max August and Manish Gaur, who's still here in Santa Fe working with children, and then attorney and now judge Raymond Ortiz. And they understood that there's so many children of divorce, particularly conflicted divorce, had no support, had no resources. In fact, Children First was the first program of its kind in the state and still is one of only about three that we know of. And if you can imagine, let's say you walk into almost any classroom here in Santa Fe, probably 50% of the children in that class are children of divorce or parent separation.
Right.
And so we've been in business since 2004, offering classes and also transitional help for children.
I think it's particularly stressful for children in the society that we live in where we don't have daily contact often with extended family members as kids. I mean, some people do within Santa Fe, but a lot of people, it's pretty much mom, dad, and the siblings, and that's it. So when the parents separate and you're under stress, you don't really necessarily have adults to turn to who are in that moment perfectly sane.
Well, that's a good point. One of the things the group offers is the support of other parents going through the same thing. And you have facilitators that have the skills to know how to teach some of the things that parents maybe aren't thinking about. But that support of the group, most of our clients really feel like that's a tremendous support to them.
It's a support to the other adults.
The other adults, the parents in our groups.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Just to emphasize something that Lisa mentioned earlier, is what happens to children of divorce is not intentional on the part of the parents. We know that parents are always doing their very best.
Yeah.
And what we seek to do is give them new tools for the toolbox.
So
work on their skills and attitudes.
Yeah, I mean, let's talk about what some of those tools are. What are some things that parents really might not know or think about with respect to their children in times of separation and divorce?
Well, it's a really good point because, you know, everybody is inundated with marriage and weddings and the dress and how to be married and how to stay married, but really nobody knows much about how to divorce. It suddenly became a big wave in the 70s and it really hasn't slowed down. And I'm sure most people know that they should not say bad things about the child's parent. Most people probably know that. Although,
so like one parent saying a bad thing about the
right,
other parent
right.
or the child. Yeah.
That is very damaging to kids. And I think most people realize that. But divorce being such a new thing, people are stressed. They're faced with carving out a new life for themselves. They have a lot of pressure, financial pressure, social pressure. You know, who are the friends going to go with? So the parents are very stressed out, and they might be on the phone with a friend, let's say, and thinking, oh, well, I'm talking to my friend. I can really let it rip. But the kids are, you know, in the next room, or maybe they were upstairs, but now they're right outside the door and they're hearing all this stuff. And it's really very, very toxic.
And parents, if you think your children aren't listening at any given moment, you're wrong. They hear, they take in everything.
And if they're pre-verbal, they are feeling it. They know. They can read faces. That's how they learn how their parents are doing.
I remember a dramatic example in a class that I was facilitating in which a young mom talked about having phone conversation with the dad. And when she picked up the phone and the dad was on the line and she suddenly felt very tense, their infant child would begin to cry.
Oh my
goodness.
Less
than a year old, but could feel that tension.
And could feel the mother's tension in the mother's voice.
Yes.
That's a sensitive child, but most children are sensitive like that.
Yeah.
So getting back to your question about some of the tools that we teach are how to keep your child out of the middle, you know, when both the parents are, you know, pulling for the child, and, you know, sometimes there's things like trying to, you know, give them more of what they want, so catering to the child to try to have them love them more than the other parent. Allowing their child to love both parents, you know, so like Prentice was saying, when you're talking about the other co-parent, learning to say some positive things about the other co-parent is really important. And I should say that we try to use the term co-parent because now that you're not a married couple, you want to see yourself in a new role because you're always going to be a parent, whether you're married or divorced, separated. So that's really important. And also the idea of supporting the children to look at, you were talking about that extended family. Now the child has two homes and a larger extended family, especially as other, you know, the parents go on to remarry or be in other relationships, and then they have more grandparents. And so, and then some of the main skills they learn are tools of communication and how to work through conflicts and negotiate, and those are really important skills. And then work on taking care of themselves, their own recovery through the emotional trauma of divorce, the sadness, the financial fear, and all those kinds of things. So,
and in the process, not using the kids as a sounding board for those problems. And that's tricky business. A lot of even really superb parents can't help themselves. They just do that, and it's a very bad idea.
Yes, it's very easy to slip and to start confiding in, say, an older child as your confidant. But no, I would encourage every divorcing parent to get a support system, get with their friends, families, talk over the phone, but do it in a place where the kids are far from it, because it makes them feel confused, makes them feel split in two. They have two homes now. They need to feel safe at both homes. And in the schools, we professionals in the schools, the teachers, the principal, everyone in the school, we see the effects of divorce.
Yeah, and for you as a school counselor, I mean, what is your day like? Like, what do you see? Do the kids actually talk to you? I mean, a lot of time kids, they've got something going on, but they're not going to say it to somebody who's a stranger. Sometimes they don't even say it to their own parents.
Well, the kids are very open, really. They don't have a lot of filter. I was talking to a little boy whose parents are really struggling in their divorce. They're going back to court a lot, and he's only 5 years old. And I said, gosh, honey, you know, you're having a hard day. What would you like right now? What would be the best thing you could do? And he said, I want to be alone. I just want to be alone. I go, really? What would you do? I would just be alone by myself and play video games for 2 days. And that's how he was dealing with his stress, or wanted to, because the parents were just fighting so much.
And really, I'm thinking about how I got into this particular line. I'm a mediator in my other life. I was working at Carlos Gilbert School. This was about 20 years ago, establishing a mediation program. And a third grade teacher came to me and said, I'd like you to conduct a mediation with one of my students, a third grader. He's very disruptive in class. So they sat down with me in my little office, and I asked him, what would your ideal classroom be like? And he said, we could bring toys to school and we could play with them. Teacher said, I don't let them bring toys. Great. What else would you like? He said, I wish my mommy and daddy would get back together. These were parents who came every afternoon and shouted at each other in the hallway about who's going to take the kid home.
And he still wanted them to get back together because that would have...
Because he was lost.
Yeah.
Because, you know, kids have divorced. So if daddy left mom, is daddy going to leave me?
Right.
Is mom going to leave me?
I think those are really important things to think about, because parents know very well that they're not going to abandon their... Most parents aren't going to abandon their children. But the kids don't know that. Like, how do you counsel the parents? Like, what do you tell them that they need to say explicitly to their kids?
Well, that's kind of where it goes back to allowing the child to love both parents. Like I said, you know, making comments that positive about the other parent, not trying to prevent the other parent from seeing the child and that kind of thing. Just supporting the child in having two parents, and not to feel like they're going to be pulled away from the other parent, or if one parent is saying that the other parent isn't any good, that's actually reflecting on the child. The child takes that in like a sponge and feels, you know, they start feeling bad about themselves, and I shouldn't love daddy because mommy thinks daddy's bad and that kind of thing.
And something we'll frequently hear in our groups is that the one parent will say, well, we go to our son's games and we're all sitting on, you know, on with the team. And then across the hall will be the other parent and won't even sit on the same side. And how much that hurts the children in the bleachers as well as the kid who's playing is that, I mean, for one thing, gosh, how embarrassing, like everybody sees, you know, the family dynamic. And we will, in the group, talk about how to ask the co-parent to, you know, look at their behavior and to say, you know, I think it's really embarrassing for our kid that we're not sitting together, and approach it from, you know, what is best for the child. And then usually a week or two later, the parent will come in and say, we're sitting on the same side at the game. And my son is just thrilled now that it's, you know, that at least we're doing that. Not getting back together, but sitting on the same team. It's a good metaphor.
What do you do when you have a situation where one parent comes in and says, the other parent is saying horrible things about me to the kids, and that other parent isn't the one coming in for counseling. It's the one who's been spoken badly of.
From our perspective, it's really important that each parent first work on their own skills and attitudes. And we understand and we reassure people. We tell them, this is not about trying to control the other parent. Can't do that. What you can do is be your best self, be your best parent with your child. And, you know, it really does take two to have a fight. And so when one parent is changing behavior and the other parent is not getting that reactive behavior, we would certainly hope and expect, and oftentimes, that other parent's behavior will diminish somewhat. So that's really all we can do.
What about when there's like substance abuse issues? That makes it even harder, because that person's not going to want to come in unless they're really ready for recovery.
That's true.
That's a challenging one. And it's not always that easy to address, to be honest, within the group, because, like we said, we focus on what's going on right there. I mean, people to attend the group, they can't be, you know, under the influence. And but that is a challenging thing, and we can suggest, you know, going to see a counselor or, but that is, you know, that is common, or we certainly hear it. We don't always know if everything we're hearing is accurate, but
that does bring up the some of the nuts and bolts issues. I want to talk a little bit about how that works. Many of our referrals come through family court services in the First District Court. They do not refer every conflicting divorcing or separating couple, because they do their own screening. And so if there is serious substance abuse that they've noted, they probably are not going to refer that parent. They're going to refer them first to substance abuse treatment, you know, before they would refer them to us. And I want to talk just about a little bit about the structure of the classes, because what we've learned, we've tried a variety of formats, and what we've learned is it really takes a while for people, parents, the participants in the class, to really absorb the changes that take place.
Now, I just want to back up and say, okay, you do have classes that anybody can attend.
Yes.
So if somebody wants to call Children First and say, I'm going through a divorce, how do I sign up? They can do so?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And in fact, we would like to do that. This is our appearance here is part of that effort. We're trying to increase our public presence within Santa Fe. We've been around for 11 years, and we're still under the radar for way too many people. So, yes.
So tell us about the classes.
Okay. So the structure is 9 classes, and we run Monday and Thursday sessions. So the ideal is that a divorced couple, one parent would be in, say, the Monday class and the other in the Thursday class, so that they're getting the same material, same content, but in different groups, so they don't have to deal with that. They can hear from their own groups.
Now, is it gender separated? Is there a men's group and a women's group?
No, okay. No. In fact, we look for diversity. So there are men and women of all ages, and people who are young couples who are just in the beginning the process of divorce, people who've been divorced for a long time, and then 2 co-facilitators, male and female. And most of these are licensed professional therapists.
Like
Prentice.
Like Prentice here. So you are a facilitator, and you basically kind of teach these classes.
Yes, and I can't tell you the joy that I receive watching the changes occur in a short time. I mean, you know, it's still, they're going to have to practice what they've learned. But as they learn these new skills, their load just seems to lighten. You know, the first couple of classes, you know, nobody gets married to have a divorce. You know, they set out with the best of intentions and dreams for the future and happily ever after. And so when that doesn't work, it's, you know, we often talk about divorce as a death, and there's a grief process. And so these are people in, not only in deep grief, but there could be trauma over, you know, they're not going to see their kids as much, and they are really down in the dumps, guilty and depressed. But every week they see that there is a way out through healthier communication skills and through the support they're getting. You know, the curriculum is very extensive. They get a lot of material, but it's the group part, the group aspect that really makes the difference, because you see yourself and other people. You know, you might not see what you're doing, but boy, you see it across the room.
And then suddenly that light bulb goes off, and you're like, oh, I'm doing that.
And speaking of the circle and the room, something that is a very powerful symbolic gesture is in the center of a circle is this round table, little tablecloth, and everybody brings photos of their children. And we start the group, I'm so-and-so, and I'm here for my children, and list their names and their ages. And, you know, you'll look around the group, and then you'll look at the circle, and there's like 30 children And those 30 children are why we're there and who will be the direct beneficiaries of the group process.
Do you ever get people coming in who have children who are like young adults but who are also suffering from a divorce, from their parents' divorce?
Yes, I think people of all ages suffer. Do you mean that the divorce happened a long time ago and they're still suffering?
No, or like somebody goes to college and then their parents get divorced. So it's not like there's that daily dynamic of who's going to sit on whose side or whatever, or you know, taking them through the developmental process of childhood and adolescence. Yeah. I mean, they're grown. And yet, it's still hard.
Divorce is, there's no easy pass in divorce because all of a sudden now the older child, as you described, their holidays are split. They, you know, well, it's Thanksgiving at mom's, Christmas at dad's, and they have more years of experience of it being the other way. They have these other memories. And yes, it's very hard. Families, you know, the in-laws and the grandparents, it's very disruptive. And one hope that we have is that the children that I mentioned in the center of the circle, as they grow up and their parents are modeling this better communication, that possibly they might not end up divorced, or if they do, they would have role models for a healthy way to navigate so that there's minimal damage to all concerned.
We're talking about the organization Children First. And one thing that that I did want to ask you is, what does the kind of acting out that kids do look like at different ages? In other words, you were saying, you know, that a little infant might just cry because he or she is tense because mom is tense. What about toddlers? What about first graders? What about teenagers?
Well, they do have, you know, some very different behaviors. Some kids get more withdrawn. I think when they're toddlers, they're really kind of defiant, that you get that more of that behavior. Or a lot of times, you know, toddlers or younger kids will try to get attention put on themselves. As kids get older, they sometimes, unfortunately, learn skills of manipulation because mom says, well, don't tell dad about this, or dad says, you know, this is what I'm going to do, and I know mom won't like it. And so they learn to not tell the truth because they're trying to protect each parent, and they become trying to be the adult when they're still young. So those are some of the behaviors they can pick up. Mm-hmm. Acting out in school, like I said, having a lot of anxiety, you know, as kids get, you know, more in middle school and high school. It also can lead to drug use and alcohol use, dropping out of school, not being able to pay attention, early pregnancy.
And we do talk about the various kinds of impacts on children and the various behaviors, because one of the things that happens, you know, a child comes back from a visit with a parent and is upset, and the other parent says, oh, obviously dad's a bad father. And so we want them to see that some of these behaviors are really not the fault of the individual parent, but of the conflict.
Now, what do you do, Prentice, when you're in school and a kid says, and you say, what would be your ideal thing? What would you most like to do? And the child says, play video games for 48 hours and eat Skittles. Well, you know, those things probably aren't good for the kid because, I mean, from what I've read, too much exposure to screens really doesn't calm a child down, even though it's kind of addictive and all that. So what do you, like, that's what the kid wants. What do you say? What do you do?
Well, I would talk to the parents and recommend that they provide some kind of a, when they're with their son or daughter, one-on-one, or if it's multiple kids, you know, suggest maybe just going out and playing with your kids. I think a lot of parents never learned or forgot the kids, they don't really care about big toys as much as just having their parents' attention, taking the dog for a walk, throwing a ball. I mean, it's just kind of the basic things, cooking with them, you know, sitting down on the floor with them, playing a game. And unfortunately, you know, we're also busy anymore. Money's tight and people have to work and they come home exhausted. And really what kids want, what that boy in particular, he wanted the fighting to stop. But if the fighting would stop, then I'm sure he would want to just have some hangout time. And I'm not a big believer in, you know, let's watch TV together as a hangout time. Yeah, just play with the kid. That's what I do with them, and they, you know, they love to have an adult give them attention and laugh at their jokes or make a funny sound with a puppet. They really
do. You have toys and stuff in your office?
Oh yeah, yeah.
What do they like to play with?
They love puppets, and they'll be mommy or daddy, and you know, you see a lot, but basically they're just having time out from the school day, because school can be a stressor for kids because, you know, they're expected to do things in a certain way on time, and kids just don't have enough time to just, you know, be themselves. Everything's on a schedule, and some of the behaviors I notice that you mentioned is, you know, they'll be lined up to go somewhere and there'll be some kid in the back punching the one next. And it's because they're upset and they have nowhere to go with that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So in addition to the classes, you also have what's called a Safe Haven program. What is that?
Well, Safe Haven is a neutral transfer of children between parents. So sometimes when parents are so conflicted, they can be court ordered to this, or it's a service that people can use for free. And therefore, instead of the co-parents maybe getting into a fight or showing how much they can't get along in front of the children, one child is dropped off at the center by one parent, and there's some monitors who, you know, stay with the kid and maybe play or read, and then that parent leaves and the other parent arrives and picks the child up. So that can be a really helpful service so that kids don't have to go through the conflict and the tension.
Now, you've been doing this for quite a while. Do you get feedback from people who were, say, in the program, you know, 5, 7, 10 years ago and how their lives are going now?
Well, actually, occasionally around town, I run into people and they'll say to me, this program has helped me so much and my kids, and I so appreciate what it has done for my family. And we get a lot of people come through the class and say, you know, they wish they had taken it before they got married, before they had children, because it's really offering skills that everybody can use in terms of any relationship, you know, and tension and relationship. And
can they do that? Can somebody say, I'm about to get married, or I just got married, I need skills, I want to show up at the classes?
We're open to it, sure.
Yeah,
sure.
Very interesting.
Welcome. Yeah.
Yeah, that whole kind of counseling for young couples seems like a very wise idea, because there's a lot of people who just shouldn't be having kids in the first place. They just aren't suited for it or ready to do it, and they're pressured to do it, and then these disasters happen. Mm-hmm. How do people find out more? There's a website, there's a phone number.
Sure. The phone number that people can call if they'd like to enroll or get more information is 505-473-7630. And our website is very simply childrenfirstnm, standing for New Mexico, .org. And that gives you all sorts of information about the program, as well as how you can actually enroll directly from there.
Is there a national organization?
There isn't a national organization, but there is an organization that basically has put the curriculum together, and that is the curriculum we use. So there's just pockets of this type of program all scattered around. But we're the only, pretty much the only resource right here in the Santa Fe area. And there's one other in Albuquerque that we're aware of.
Right. And just before we go, because it does take money to run the program, we do want to acknowledge that we've received major support. We've just got a grant from the Kiwanis Club. We've also received support from the Santa Fe Rotary Foundation, the Santa Fe Collaborative Practice Group, First National Bank, and many, many individuals. Also, we have a fundraising benefit coming up in September.
All right, and maybe we will announce that when the time comes. Children First's executive director is Lisa Stuckey. Philip Crump is the board president, and Prentice Chatfield is a school counselor and therapist and facilitator for Children First. Thank you all so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you
so much, Mary Charlotte.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte.